9:00 a.m. in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Serena Aboujoud. The U.S. government has announced that a Quebec-based company will be the principal contractor in a potential shipment of high-explosive mortar cartridges and other related equipment to Israel. The news comes in spite of the fact that early this year, Canada's federal government said that it would not authorize any weapons shipments to Israel. However, at the time, critics noted that the move would not prohibit weapons to be transferred to Israel via the United States like they are in this deal. The loophole exists because of trade arrangements between the U.S. and Canada, which allow the easy transfer of military equipment without much regulatory oversight. Since the announcement, the NDP, the National Council of Canadian Muslims, and Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East have urged the government to prevent the transfer. The value of the sale is around 83 million Canadian dollars, and delivery is likely to start in 2026. The Supreme Court of India has urged doctors to return to work after an 11-day strike. The strike was caused by the fatal sexual assault on a 31-year-old trainee medic in Kolkata on August 9th. Since then, many doctors, apart from those in emergency services, stopped work as a means of pressuring the government to improve safety measures in medical facilities and demanding justice for the victim. On Thursday, India's Supreme Court has ordered local and national authorities to improve safety measures around medical facilities within the next 2 weeks. While some doctors have returned to their jobs after 11 days of strike, the protests in Katalaka continue. The Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railway Company has locked out some of its employees as of Thursday morning after failing to reach an agreement with the Teamster Union. The lockout will affect the operations on some EXO commuter rail lines around Montreal, including the 11 Vaudreuil-Hewson, 12 Saint-Jérôme, and 14 Candiac. EXO has plans to launch a shuttle service between stations during peak hours Monday. Before then, the bus system will be the only option. Federal Labor Minister Stephen McCannon has since promised binding arbitration in order to resume operations. For more, follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the Tommy John Show here on CGLO, 1690 AM here on a hot and humid Monday, August the 26th. We're going to have a great show for you guys today. We have the NFL preseason all but wrapped up, so we'll preview week one here on CGLO, 1690 AM, not to mention the United States Open. Kicking off, I guess, serving off this morning at 11 a.m. in Queens, New York. And we have a lot of great matches that we will get into for the final major of 2024. Also, big news in the NHL. Last week, we predicted Patrick Laine would get traded to Montreal. And 30 minutes after our show ended, he ended up in Montreal. Not to mention Formula One is back. So it is a big, big week here on the Tommy John Show. As you can hear, we're at a college campus here at Concordia. There's frosh going on. So if you hear music in the background, that is not me. That is the big frosh DJ they have outside. So it's a very festive week going on here at the campus of Concordia. And I know that also means there's Canadian college football and Canadian college sports starting up again, which we will talk a bit over the next few weeks about. You know, give Concordia and McGill and other schools some love. But why don't we start off, like we always do, a quick recap of the past week in the world of sports. And since we're in Montreal, might as well start off with the Patrick Laine trade, which happened right after we talked about it on this show. Literally half of our show last week was reports that Laine wanted out of Columbus, and teams we thought were like, you know what? We're not just saying he should go to Montreal because we're in Montreal. We have a lot of Montreal Canadiens fans as listeners. It just makes sense. They have nothing to lose. They can eat the cap space, and they need goal scoring and size. I mean, why? And he's got 2 years left, and if it doesn't work out, then he's off your books in 2 years. And you're not going to win a cup in 2 years anyway. So might as well, you know what, give it a shot. That was my rationale. That was, hey, you know, even if the one concern would be that he's not a good locker room guy, but apparently he's gone to the player assistance program. He's had talks with a bunch of people saying he's in the best mental state of his career. So we'll see. So Montreal send Jordan Harris away to Columbus in exchange for Laine and a second. The second was taking the salary over, what, $8.7 million a year. And it makes sense. I know Jordan Harris is a good young defenseman. I wouldn't say great. He's just steady. There was a lot of hype about him when he came to Montreal. But it's just he fell out of the rotation. I mean, you have Gouley, who's emerged as a true, true stud. You have Mike Matheson there as a left-shot defenseman, as your veteran. Then you look at the system. You have Lane Hudson. You have a whole bunch of guys. Logan Mayu and Reinbach are no their right-shot defensemen. But still, in that left-shot side, there just wasn't much room. If you have Matheson, you have Gouley, you have Lane Hudson. And then, not to mention, even if you want to put him down there, the right shots alone with Savard, and you still have Struble, you still have a bunch of other players, like I mentioned, and obviously Reinbach, we don't think is going to play this year, but Logan Mayu is supposed to be one of the guys in the rotation. So it's just a very crowded defensive room, and if Columbus need a whole lot of things, them to get Jordan Harris, who can play on their third, maybe even second pair on defense, I don't hate it for them. They just needed a return. They just needed any kind of return at all, and Jordan Harris is a very, very solid player. He's 24 years old. I mean, he's played a decent amount of hockey games. What did he play? He played 65 games for the Canadiens 2 years ago, 56 this past season. So he's played a lot of games, and he's young. He's young, and he played college at Northeastern, knows what it's like to play at the highest level now in college, has over 100 games in the NHL. And Columbus is just a team, they're just trying to acquire as many young players as they can. You know, they have Fantilli there. They have they signed Goudreau, and they're hoping more with that Laine Goudreau connection. That hasn't happened. But you still need a veteran guy around in Columbus. So, all right, you still have Johnny Goudreau there, who's not old by any means. He must be, what, 29, 30 years old? So he's not that old. But still, you need a guy like that. They still have him. They still have, in my opinion, a whole another level to get to. When you lucked out and got Fantilli, no, I know Leo Carlson's a fantastic player, but you signed Sean Moynihan, who's a veteran guy who can teach some people. You still have Sillinger. I mean, there's players there. There's players there. I keep calling the other guy with Johnson. It's Johnson. Kent Johnson. I think I keep confusing with Johnston, but he's the kid in Dallas. Kent Johnson, he is a young, good forward. They still have Werenski there. They have pieces. Now, are they going to compete for the Stanley Cup? Heck no. But they're just trying to acquire young talent to build around Fantilli and build around these other young players. Now, Patrick Laine did not have a role there. I mean, his role was, hey, score goals for us. But he wasn't really meshing even well with Johnny Gaudreau. But having said that, he's still a 25-30 goal scorer. That's who he can be. And he comes to Montreal, and he's going to fit into that top six nicely. Whether he'll go up to the first line, I'm not sure. But you like to think it's going to be Slavkovsky, Suzuki, and Caulfield up front. And then you have Doc, Newhook, Patrick Laine on that second line. But he's going to get some power play time. He's going to get a lot of looks. There's not a lot of great goal scoring. Caulfield has the potential to be a great goal scorer, but of bona fide players who have scored 40-plus in the league, they only got Patrick Laine, and he's 26, 27 years old, still with plenty of hockey left in him. He's a big body, can hit. And not to mention, they have Montreal's one of the most cap spaces in the league. They'll take that $8.7 million for 2 years, and if it's great, you can lock him up. If he's not great, you let him walk. And what you did is you got a second-round pick in return as well to take the salary. So you're just bolstering your draft pick pool. So I really like the move by Montreal. And I'm a Bruins fan. I shouldn't be saying, oh, I like the move by Montreal. I like what they're doing. Recently, you got to tip your cap to what they're doing on paper. Obviously, we haven't seen the results on ice. But if you're trying to rebuild a team, this is how you do it. You have some good pieces. You trade them away. Get draft picks. Then you open up cap space. You can take on bad contracts, and with taking on bad contracts, you get more picks, you hit on a few players, and you quickly start to turn around. I mean, they hit on Gouley, Suzuki in the Pacioretty trade was big, Caulfield falls to them in the draft. You look what they did with Sean Moynihan when Calgary wanted Nazem Kadri. They trade Sean Moynihan away, and they gave Montreal a first to take the pick. And then Moynihan has a resurgence in Montreal, and at the deadline, they trade him for a first-round pick. So just very good business by Montreal. They got two first-round picks there. Demidov falls to them this year. They are building a very good team. They pick Fowler, the goalie from Boston College, a few years back. He's supposed to be their future, but Montembeau's played well now, so we shall see. But so far, as a team that, what, right after they made the Cup Final in the COVID year, those 2 years after, I mean, it was a bad, bad place. They were hard to watch, not competitive at all. They had to fire Ducharme. Sure, there was a buzz when they brought in St. Louis, but they needed a lot of things to go right, and it has gone right. I mean, Slavkovsky, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be Mikko Rantanen or like one of those big elite wingers, but so far he's played pretty well. At the end of last year, seemed to understand what was going on. He knew how to skate. He was like too big for as an 18-year-old. That was his problem, at least as a rookie. He didn't know he was that big. Didn't play to his size. The end of the year, he was using his size and his strength, and he played very well at the end of the year. So that gives Montrealers hope. And if you think about it, their one knock was defense when the whole, Price era. I mean, they had Subban, but then, not that, like, old Markov. Well, you need, like, good young defensemen. You cannot make that argument anymore. Montreal have a ton of great young defensemen. They have Gouley. They have Lane Hutson, supposed to be the phenom. They have Reinbacher. They have Logan Mailloux. They're loaded back end. And now you look, they needed goal scoring. And Laine, for 2 years, it's a great solution. And I don't have any problem with Montreal doing that. So that was the main point. We'll get into that later on. So that was the big trade in the NHL. The U.S. Open started today, and we already have some quick results. Number 4 seed, Alex Zverev from Germany. He wins in 4 sets, 6-2, 6-7, 6-3, 6-2. And, you know, the first round, you like to get those straight sets wins. You know, we took 4, but it was a tiebreak loss. But still, moving on to the second round is Alex Zverev. Ben Shelton from the U.S., he dismantled the 2020 champion Dominic Thiem in the first round. 6-4, 6-2, 6-2. He is moving on. Casper Ruud, the 8th seed from Norway, and a finalist here, I believe, when Alcaraz won. He takes the first set 7-6 in a tiebreak. Now has a commanding 4-1 lead in the second. The 12th seed and highest ranked American Taylor Fritz, he's up 3-2 in the opening set. The 6th seed from Russia, Alex Rublev, he has a 4-3 lead up a break there. As we head to the women's side of the bracket, and we have a bunch of news there. We had maybe a surprise that Maria Sakkari, the 9th seed, losing the first set and then having to pull out. It's a walkover for Wang from China, and that's a big, big, big win for her. I know it was just the one set, but it was a walkover, 6-2. And Sakkari, ever since she's cracked the top 10, hasn't really made a deep run in any of these majors. So that's unfortunate for her. Qingwen Zhang, who was coming in with a lot of hype as the seventh seed, winning gold at the Olympic Games. She wins in a tough battle in three sets over Amanda Anisimova. Really tough match. 4-6. Yep, 4-6. 6-4, 6-2. And Anisimova was making a great run earlier in the hardcourt season. She made the final in Canada. And she just ran into a player just playing outstanding tennis right now. Olympic gold medalist. So not much you can do there. Later on in the day, we have Coco Gauff playing in about 5 minutes or so on Arthur Ashe Stadium. Later on, Madison Keys, and maybe the biggest match of the day, Sabalenka from Belarus, who made the finals last year, looking to get back. She plays around 9 o'clock tonight, and Novak Djokovic plays tonight on Arthur Ashe at around 8:15, looking to win his 25th major and his 5th U.S. Open title. Quickly, we'll head to the NFL, and we have no more preseason games left on the calendar. Next Thursday, it will all start. The Kansas City Chiefs will raise banner number 4, the third in the Mahomes-Reed-Kelsey era, on Thursday, September 5th. They host the Baltimore Ravens. And that first week of the year is stacked. You have Baltimore-Kansas City on Thursday. On Friday, you have Green Bay at Philadelphia in Rio. In Rio, Brazil. 8:15 start. And then the Sunday night game, which I'm really looking forward to, Matt Stafford and the Rams at Jared Goff and the Lions. That's a great game for the first Sunday night football of the year. And then Monday night, Aaron Rodgers finally makes his return to the National Football League, like he did last year on a Monday night at San Francisco. What a game to start Monday night football. Other key matchups that week: you have Jacksonville and Miami, a little Battle of Florida action there. You have Tom Brady calling his first game of his career, Dallas at Cleveland. You have Bo Nix making his first ever start at Seattle. You have Jaden Daniels starting at Tampa Bay for Washington. You have the Caleb Williams era starting at home against Tennessee. And then the huge question mark: who's going to start for the Patriots at Cincinnati at 1 p.m. on September the 8th? Is it Drake May? Is it Jacoby Brissett? Who knows? And you still have other great games: Cardinals, Bills, Texans, Colts. A lot of people like what they're seeing from the Colts. I mean, Anthony Richardson, when he played, really put on a show. But it all comes down to his health. He got hurt early twice last year in 5 games. And the second injury with his shoulder, he had to miss the rest of the year. So we'll see. They obviously have the kid Mitchell. They have Pierce. They have Pittman. Jonathan Taylor, a good O-line. Shane Steichen, one of the better offensive coaches in the league. We'll see what happens. So we're getting into a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we are going to talk about who I like for the U.S. Open, as well as what the hell is going to happen in New England and Pittsburgh. That's next year on the Tommy John Show, back after this quick word from our sponsors.
At Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from John Tolon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinema Public, for a lively cinema.
Autobeat.
Yeah.
Best in electronic music.
Let me know when you push that record button, baby.
Thursday nights, yeah. 7 to 9 on CJLO, 1690 AM.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Now you know you're the baddest motherfucker around here. I don't care. We'll be right back.
back here on the Tommy John Show. And we have crazy breaking news right now. We were going to get into it later in the show. What is going on with CeeDee Lamb and the Cowboys? Is he going to get his money? According to Adam Schefter, the deal has just been finalized. CeeDee Lamb gets his massive extension. It's 4 years, $136 million, making him the second highest paid non-quarterback in league history. The deal includes a $38 million signing bonus, the largest ever given to a wide receiver. So that just broke from Adam Schefter. The Cowboys and CeeDee Lamb finally come to an agreement. That was hanging over the Cowboys all offseason, all training camp, preseason. Is CeeDee Lamb going to be there week one when they play the Cleveland Browns? And they get the deal done. He is a very rich man now. He was already a rich man, but now, following an unreal year, he had 135 catches last year for 1,749 yards. First team All-Pro. They had to get him there. They don't really have much left there now. Like, wide receiver-wise, I mean, Brandon Cooks, I guess. I mean, Ferguson, the tight end, is probably going to be the next best option. And if you saw Trey Lance over the weekend, for the people saying Dak Prescott wasn't going to get his money, Trey Lance threw 5 interceptions in a preseason game against the Chargers' second and third string players. So you could see Dak Prescott got some leverage, but I would not be surprised if Jerry lets this go a little bit. And now is he ripping the Band-Aid off today? He's like, you know what? Let's just sign the check. Give CeeDee what he wants. Give Micah what he wants. Give Dak what he wants. And away we go. We'll see. But that the priority, I even said, was get CeeDee Lamb done. He's the one holding out. Dak's still showing up to practices. Micah Parsons still showing up to practices. CeeDee Lamb was entitled to this contract. He's earned it. When they reasoned, the only reason they traded Amari Cooper was because they said CeeDee Lamb was going to be this next great wide receiver. And we're all like, yeah, he was a first-round pick, but he hasn't popped like Jefferson, or he hasn't popped like Jamar Chase did in his rookie year. Well, he popped. My God, did he ever have a fantastic season. And he was entitled to every single dollar he got based on last year alone. He had 135 catches for basically 1,800 yards. And Dak Prescott, we love Dak, but to say he would be the same quarterback if CeeDee Lamb wasn't on the field this year, that'd be lying. Because where are those 135 other targets going to go? What, Ferguson? Brandon Cooks? Like, come on. Dumping it off to, what, a wash Zeke? Keyshawn, what's his name? God, I keep forgetting the other guy's name. Who they drafted from Kansas State. The little small running back. He'll come to me. Like, were they going to dump it off to him? I mean, there's really no reason why it should have taken this long. And I know they're trying to get maybe a bit less of a bargain. Maybe they saved themselves like $2 million. But it sounded like CeeDee Lamb wasn't moving from that number, and now that he's done, all the attention in the world is going to be on Jamar Chase and the Bengals getting that deal done, because I don't think he's playing until he gets his new deal. And understandably, Dallas and CeeDee Lamb got all the headlines because it's the Cowboys. They're America's team. They're the most popular team, largest fan base. We got that. But now that's gone. Is it going to shift to, is Dak going to get paid or Mike going to get paid? Or I think in the short term is going to be, okay, Jamar Chase, is he going to get his contract? Now, Jamar Chase is probably looking at that. He's like, okay, that's four years, 136. You know, give me 4 years, 145, and we're good. That's what he's probably thinking right now. And I'm not saying people argue if you prefer Lamb or Chase. Chase, every year in the league, has done it. Now, I know he has Joe Burrow as quarterback, but still, Dak's not a borderline top 10 quarterback. But every year he's been in the league, Jamar Chase has produced. He's made the Pro Bowl every year. He's had 1,000 yards every year. Last year, even when Burrow went down, he had over 100 catches and played really well for Jake Browning. Hell, he went to a Super Bowl. You know, Jamar Chase is a big game player. You gotta think it's going to be a bigger deal for Ja'Marr Chase. But we shall see. It's a huge news, though, that they got that deal done. I always thought they will. In my mind, I'm thinking, are Dallas really going to go into the year without CeeDee Lamb? Is that really going to happen? Yeah, so they get the deal done. That's huge for Dallas. They needed some good news. They had Trey Lance throwing 5 picks. Ugh, they just needed some good news. Everyone talking about that playoff game last year against Green Bay. You let Jordan Love and the Packers basically annihilate you. You had a few late touchdowns and 2-point conversions to make it look more respectable. It was an annihilation. Just a terrible, terrible performance. You had that all offseason. You had people calling for McCarthy's job. We had Dak. Oh, my God. Dak being labeled as, someone replaceable. Trey Lance at the year. That's why they traded for Trey Lance. And then Trey Lance stinks up the joint like I've never seen in preseason in a long time against backups. You had CeeDee Lamb holding out. Everyone's making fun of you for bringing back Zeke. We're going to go all in the offseason. They don't spend a dime. It was just a rough, rough offseason if you were a Dallas Cowboys fan. This is a good start of changing that. Locking up your all-world, all-pro receiver. Got it done. Great. He's happy. Next, for me, you got to sign Parsons, but I think he's still going to play. But after seeing what Trey Lance did over the weekend, I was honestly thinking beforehand, you know what? Dak giving Prescott $60 million a year is a bit rich for me. Let's see if this Trey Lance kid can play. I mean, he was drafted 3rd overall for a reason by San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan's usually good at at analyzing quarterbacks. He took him 3rd overall, traded a boatload of draft picks to get him. It just didn't work out because of injuries. Maybe he's the answer. And I just didn't, you see flashes. Sure, he's fast. They got a ton of yards, don't get me wrong, but it's just these mistakes you don't think you'd see from a guy who's been in the league for a while now. And I know he hasn't played a lot, but what's this, his 4th year in the league, and you're the 3rd overall pick? You'd expect to see, more game-breaking ability, I'd say. He broke the game open, don't get me wrong, just for the other team. He was throwing picks left and right. 5 interceptions, and I know a few of them came at the end of the game. He's trying to push the ball down the field. You understand that. But someone was a very happy man on the sideline, and that was Dak Prescott. He's like, oh, boy, this is the guy, maybe, to replace me? There was 5 picks in a preseason game against the backups of the Chargers. I'll take, what'd you say, Jerry? Can I get 5 years, $300 million? 295, maybe get 100, maybe get 215 of that guaranteed. Well, why don't you, Jerry? That's what he's thinking when he saw Trey Lance play this weekend. My goodness. Now, if it was me, I have to see. I think Dak would go back after this year. If he played well, they're like, fine, here's your money. I think he would stay in Dallas. I'm not buying the rumors of, he wants to go to the Raiders or he's going to go somewhere else, the Giants. I'm not buying those rumors. I think he would go back to Dallas, or maybe not. But if you ask me, I think he likes Mike McCarthy. He likes playing in Dallas. He doesn't get all these progressive commercials and sleep commercials or mattress commercials if he's the quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't think so. It's because he's the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. That's why. But nonetheless, he still needs to prove he can win big playoff games. He's won, 2? He beat Russell Wilson in Seattle 100 years ago. And then they beat, Brady in his last game. But that Tampa team was awful the whole year. I think they were 8-9. And then the next week, stunk it up against San Francisco. Just go to the top of the head. Dak Prescott, awful against Green Bay last year. Awful. Awful against San Francisco at San Francisco when Zeke snapped the ball to him and there was no lineman, whatever that play was. Forgot the down the year before that at home against San Francisco in the wild card game. Forgot that the ref has to touch the ball, cost them the game. Trying to think of other games. He lost to the Rams 1 year in the when the Rams are playing at the Coliseum. I know we played decent against Aaron Rodgers at home as a rookie that showed promise. Okay, this is the guy. That's just on the top of my head. He lost to someone else, too. There's for sure another one I'm forgetting in there. But Dak Prescott seems to just always lose these games. I've never seen anything like it. Maybe Phillip Rivers, like a quarterback who's good, very good in the regular season. And then they get to the playoffs, and it's awful. I mean, I love Lamar Jackson, too. He's flirting with that line now, too. And Lamar in the regular season is a top, hell, maybe top two quarterback if you're going on regular season performance. He has two MVPs, the same amount of MVPs as Mahomes. And then in the playoffs, I don't know what happens. That's why he's not. That's why no one takes him over Allen or Burrow or Mahomes. Why should they? You know why? It's the playoffs. And I have to hear First Take and all these other shows say, oh, Dak Prescott deserves his money. Dak Prescott needs to get paid. He was for what? To lose in the playoffs again? If I'm Dallas, let's just wait and see. And I know Trey Lance stunk up the joint, but there's going to be a lot of options next year. There's a Shador Sanders in the draft. There's a Carson Beck's in the draft. Quinn Ewers. There's 100 players. You're telling me Dak Prescott's going to get $60 million a year to stink up the joint in the playoffs and lose? Or you can take that $60 million and build up the roster a bit better and try and find another quarterback that you like. But it comes to two things. If Dallas is so in love with Dak Prescott and thinks Dak Prescott is the next Troy Aikman, is the next Roger Staubach, then they would pay him whatever he wants to stay. But they clearly don't think that way. They don't. You see Mahomes waiting for a new deal? You see Josh Allen waiting for a new deal? Joe Burrow waiting for a new deal? Trevor Lawrence? Justin Herbert? No. Those guys, as soon as it was up, you didn't hear anything about it, and it was just, oh, he signed his extension today. And he got a lot of money. Because those teams believe in those guys. Whether they'll be right, we'll see. But at least Josh Allen has played unreal in the playoffs, played unreal last year. Maybe outplayed Mahomes in the 13 seconds game. Like, he was that good. Like, Josh Allen has played like, against the Patriots. They didn't punt one game. Josh Allen in the playoffs balls out. Joe Burrow went to Arrowhead and beat Mahomes. He also went on the road and beat the number one seed Titans that year. He went to a Super Bowl. And he was a questionable hit out of bounds call from going to another Super Bowl. So Joe Burrow's proven he can play big in big games. Trevor Lawrence, as much like the knock him, was down 27-0 and came back and won a playoff game and almost beat the Chiefs on the road. And then last year he got banged up and they were 8-3. When have you seen Dak Prescott against a better team in a big spot outplay someone? And the answer is never. Ever. And I like Dak Prescott. I think he's a great guy. And I think he's a probably borderline top 10 quarterback. He's in that Kirk Cousins discussion. Maybe a bit higher than that. But yeah, I know people are going to say he was second in MVP voting. Well, why was he? I mean, he's a good quarterback. I'm not saying he is. But why are you going to make a guy the highest paid player in the history of the league for good, borderline top 10? You're not winning a Super Bowl. Like, why? And Jerry Jones is getting up there in age, and he wants another one. Ever since he kicked out Jimmy Johnson and Barry Switzer came in. I know they won one with Barry Switzer. But ever since that change, they weren't the same football team. They weren't. Went downhill from there, and ever since then, the Cowboys are the teams of what if. And now they have a chance to make a hard decision that might benefit their football team. It might not. But I think it might. You've done the Dak Prescott experiment with Amari Cooper, with CeeDee Lamb, a healthy Zeke, best O-line in the league, amazing defense, and it still got you nowhere. So now on a worse team, an older Dak Prescott, you're going to give him $60 million a year or $58 million a year, you can't be serious. You cannot, based on what you've seen, you cannot be serious. Those playoff performances have been awful. Awful. 10 points against San Francisco. They get blown out against Green Bay at home. He doesn't know the rules at home against San Francisco. And then the cherry on top. The cherry on top of all of this. All of this. Is he has the audacity. Dak Prescott, who I think is a very nice guy. You know, seems down to earth. Close with his family. Okay, yes, he seems like a very nice guy. He has audacity to be like, well, like, why don't, like, the way he walks around, he thinks he's John Elway. And the way he played in that, I don't know what you call it, playoff game against Green Bay. That was the cherry on top. They were the 2 seed because the Eagles vomited on themselves down the stretch last year. Vomited, whatever that was, gave away the division to Dallas. Dallas, like, oh, we got the home playoff game we wanted. We are back. You need breaks, and we got a big one. Instead of going on the road, we are at home until we probably face San Francisco in the championship game. But we're good now. Oh, my God. Green Bay got in on the last day of the year. They didn't just lose a squeaker, they got dismantled. It was 41-16 at one point, I think. And I have to hear everyone in the media is coving up for this guy. I have to hear how McCarthy's not a good coach. At least McCarthy's won a Super Bowl. He wins 12 games a year, McCarthy. Sure, some of his players are undisciplined. That's fair enough. But everyone blaming McCarthy for Dak Prescott struggling in the playoffs. It's got to stop. He was struggling with Jason Garrett. He was struggling with everyone. Even in college, he was at Mississippi State. They had 2 big games. I know one of those was the one, I forget who was it, Auburn or someone else. And the big one was at Alabama. He did not play well at all when he was in the Heisman conversation. I'm not saying he's a bad football player, Dak Prescott. I'm not. All I'm saying is to give him $60 million. $60 million. 60 a year. To lose, to know where you're going to go. You know where the cap is with this guy. How big of a sample size do we need? Like, oh my God, it's crazy. To get to the same point, they're going to get to the same point. I think Dallas will make the playoffs just because Dak plays well in the regular season. And then they get to the playoffs, and I don't know what happens. But then the media has it 2 different ways. They like to crap on what's going on in Dallas, saying, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know. The team's not as good as it used to be. And then they turn around and say, well, I would give Dak $60 million. That makes no sense. You're either a playoff team and you pay the quarterback, or you stink. And why are you going to give the quarterback all that money if your team stinks? Seriously. So I started off this rant. CeeDee Lamb had to pay him if you want Dak to be good. That's my whole point. If he wasn't there, oh boy. And Dak's going to put up his 4,000 yards with his 26th passing touchdowns. He'll have his picks. Don't get me wrong. Dak Prescott will have interceptions. That is one. If one thing's for sure, he'll have those. And when he does, everyone's going to blame Mike McCarthy and blame everyone else. Even in the playoff game last year, they're like, oh, they're blaming Dan Quinn and the defense. Okay, they didn't play great either. But Dan Quinn and Micah Parsons throw that pick six and throw the interception inside their own 20 to start a drive. That wasn't them. I am telling you, it is crazy. That was the offseason. Everyone talked about Dak and CeeDee getting paid. I knew CeeDee was getting paid. If they were smart, they'd pay him. And you know Parsons is going to get paid. They'd be stupid not to pay Micah Parsons. But the one which is very rare in a situation to not pay the quarterback, this is one. Out of those three, if you put a gun to my head 2 weeks ago, you got to pay 2 of the 3 and you got to let one walk. I let Prescott walk. You can make an argument that Micah Parsons is one of, it's what, a top three pass rusher in the league. You can make an argument. CeeDee Lamb is one of the three best receivers in the league. Can you make an argument that Dak Prescott's a top three quarterback? How about top five? Top seven? No. Top eight? Maybe top 10? I don't think so. I have Mahomes ahead of him. I have Allen ahead of him. I have Burrow ahead of him. I have Lamar ahead of him. I have who? Trevor Lawrence, CJ Stroud. I know it's been 1 year, but you like to think you take him over him. Matt Stafford's better than him. Jared Goff's better than him. This is on the top of my head. Do you count Aaron Rodgers? Do you count Tua? Do you count Herbert? Who do we count? Seriously, who do we count? If you ask me, he's anywhere from, at best, 9, probably 12 in the quarterback rankings. And people can say he finished second MVP voting all the time. Ask any GM in the league if they would trade 1-for-1 Dak Prescott for Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Trevor Lawrence, Jared Goff, Matt Stafford. For 1 year, would any GM trade Dak for their quarterback who have those top 10 guys? No. You might find the occasional one that takes one over Hurts. Maybe, but Hurts went to a Super Bowl and played unreal in that Super Bowl. So I understand that one. That's maybe closer. Maybe, you know, you can argue he's right behind Jared Goff. But Jared Goff was sensational last year, and he's been to a Super Bowl with the Rams. And if Dan Campbell takes the points in those games last year, he's in another Super Bowl. Plus, he's beaten Dak Prescott head-to-head in the playoffs. I don't want to hear that the Lions are a good team. Are you kidding me? Do you know the teams that Dak Prescott has had? With all, when his rookie year, when Zeke was running for, 100 and some yards a game, that was one of the best O-lines I've ever seen. How many Hall of Famers are you going to have on one O-line? Couldn't get it done. So, like, let's be real here. I'm not, if someone's going to give him that money. You have an Oakland, Las Vegas Raiders will give him the money. The way Daniel Jones is playing, I don't know. There's teams that would give him that money. Let's not get this twisted. There are at least four teams that would give Dak Prescott that money. New Orleans are dying to get rid of Derek Carr. What if the Carolina experiment fails with Bryce Young this year? Not to mention, yet we said the Raiders. So there's three teams that I think Dallas has the option to bring him back. There's three, four teams that would desperately wanted Dak Prescott. But they're also not as good. That's the kicker for Dak. Oh, you can go get your money, but you'll get killed. This rant's going all over the place, but the reason I'm saying this is Dak Prescott, no excuses now. If CeeDee Lamb didn't play this year, all my best receivers out, didn't play well, still pay me, you saw me when he was with him, okay, fine. But no excuses now. They locked up your guy, your number one target, one of the best five receivers in the league. 135 catches last year. There's no excuse. Get it done. They brought back your friend Zeke. They're trying to help you. If he vomits in the playoffs again, no. If I'm Dallas, I am not paying you $60 million. If you want 40 a year, maybe we can talk. But he wants just these outrageous, outrageous contracts. Like, outrageous. I don't know what the guaranteed money is on the CeeDee Lamb contract. It's around $34 million a year. Second highest paid behind Justin Jefferson. And now we wait for what Dallas is going to do with Micah Parsons and Dak Prescott. And if you've been listening for the last half an hour and you've heard me just rant about Dak Prescott, who I think, hell, like, I think he's a borderline top 10 quarterback, but he cannot under any circumstance be the highest paid player in the league. I cannot have it. I cannot. Remember, everyone wanted him to get paid on the first deal he got paid, and what did he give you? A lot of bad playoff performances. Sure, he played okay in the regular season, but a lot of just, what are you doing? Playoff performances. And they're probably going to pay him, and it hurts me. I'm not even a Cowboys fan. Hell, I hate the Cowboys. I hope they pay him $6 million so they can't pay the rest of their roster. But it's gone to a point now where there's no excuses. I cannot hear. Do not. If someone says Mike McCarthy's name again, I'm going to snap. He wins 12 games every year. He's won a Super Bowl without you. I don't care. It was with prime Aaron Rodgers. I do not care. It's everyone blames Mike McCarthy. Everyone blamed Dan Quinn for the playoff game last year. It can't be Dak. It can't be Dak. Pay Dak. Pay Dak $60 million for him to suck again in the playoffs. And the only reason he had a fantastic year last year is because CeeDee Lamb was playing out of his mind. They didn't have him. You had, you know, you had a reason, Dak. Oh, I didn't have my number one receiver. That's fair. You got him now. So if I'm Dallas, I'm waiting. If you wait, what's the harm? If he plays unreal, takes you to an NFC Championship game, takes you to a Super Bowl, you'll happily pay him. You'll do it the next morning. But if they are foolish enough to lock Dak up now and he just continues these awful playoff performances, then I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. We have one more ad. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about who I like for the U.S. Open and who I think should start for the Patriots in week number one. I am Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Have you just arrived in NDG? Do you want to learn French? Are you looking for a job? Would you like to get to know your neighbors better? Since 2012, Bienvenue à NDG has been welcoming people newly settled in the neighborhood by offering support to orient themselves, integrate, and feel at home. Supported by the NDG community, Bienvenue à NDG is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to facilitate the integration of immigrant persons into the community life of Notre-Dame-de-Grâce as well as into the host society and to promote intercultural relations. Our services are free, and we can serve you in more than 20 languages. Join our community. Feel free to visit our website, bienvenuendg.ca, and make an appointment with our integration counselors, in partnership with the Government of Quebec.
Do you love hip-hop and R&B? Is your Thursday afternoon lacking groove? I'm DJ Samuel D. Roberts, and I got you covered. Listen to my show, Whip Appeal. I'll be playing hip-hop bangers, R&B slow jams, and everything in between from Canada and around the globe to groove up your Thursday afternoon. Listen to Whip Appeal, Thursdays at 2 p.m. CJLO 1690 AM.
Back here in the Tommy John Show. So like I mentioned, the U.S. Open up and running out in New York. One of my favorite. I mean, I'm a Wimbledon guy, if you had to talk about history and tradition. But what I like about the U.S. Open is at night, there's just always matches on. Love the night matches at the U.S. Open. When it's like 10 o'clock, you know, having my cup of tea, sitting down, I can enjoy some tennis. I love it. It's amazing. Big news in the world of golf. Keegan Bradley winning over the weekend, the second event of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And now we are down to what? The top 30? We got the Tour Championship at Eastlake. Scottie Scheffler. It's like the weird format where they start at 10 under, and then the next one's like an 8 under, and it's 7 under. It's very odd. Even Scotty Scheffler, who's starting in first place, is like, this is a bit strange. Why am I 10 under? And then I agree, Scott. If Scotty Scheffler should win the FedEx Cup, like, that's like the way he's played, he's won 100 times this year. He won a major, he won the gold medal, which don't even count. He just won the Players, won Arnold Palmer, won Memorial. Like, Jesus, he's won every damn tournament, basically. So he is starting at 10 under par. Xander Schauffele starting at 8 under par. Hideki Matsuyama at 7. Keegan Bradley at 6 under par. Ludvig Åberg starting at 5 under. And then you have a group of 5 starting at 4 under, which is Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa, Wyndham Clark, Sam Burns, Patrick Cantlay, all starting at 4 under, 6 shots back. Sungjae Im, Sahith Fagala, Shane Lowry, Adam Scott, Tony Finau starting at minus 3. Then you got Byung Hung Ang at 2 under, Victor Hovland 2 under, Russell Henley, Akshay Bhatia, Robert McIntyre 2 under, and then the rest of the field. It's only 30 guys. Billy Horschel, Tommy Fleetwood, Seb Straka, Matthew Pavon, Taylor Pendrith, Canadian, all at 1 under par. And the people who just got in started even, and that's Chris Kirk, Tom Hoagie, Aaron Rye, Christian Bezuidenhout, and Justin Thomas. They'll all start at even, 10 back of Scotty Scheffler. Yeah, Scotty should probably win, but Xander Schauffele, I'm telling you, won 2 majors this year. I mean, people might argue, hey, whose season would you rather have? Scheffler, you win 1 major, you win a gold medal, sure. And you won 100 times, but Xander Schauffele, who won the gold medal last time, it's not like he was craving a gold medal. He won 2 majors this year at the PGA at Valhalla and then winning the Open at Royal Troon. So, just both are by far the players of the year. And, yeah, congrats to both of those guys. That is outstanding. 10 and 8 under par they're going to start. I'll definitely watch that this weekend. Now the US Open, we mentioned who I like. We went through a bit of it last week. It's, to me, it's the big three, which is weird saying now, the top three seeds. I'm not calling them the big three yet. The top three seeds, Sinner, Djokovic, Alcaraz. I think the winner is coming from one of those three. Then I counted the people with the puncher's chance. And the puncher's chance is Medvedev. I think he always plays well at the U.S. Open. I know he's not playing great coming into it, and we understand that. But Medvedev's just hard to beat at the U.S. Open. He's played amazing. He's been into the final at least 3 times. He's won here before. That's who you got to watch out for. I think you have to watch out to Zverev, even though he's made major finals before. He's made a major final here before. It's tough. It's really tough. I don't know, because he's had so many tough losses. But he's going to make... You'd like to think he makes the second week. I told you again, not pick... Tsitsipas is not playing good tennis at all. At all. I don't know what seed he is. He's probably a top 10 seed. He's 11 seed, my bad. Not liking Tsitsipas at all. I think he's in danger tomorrow against the Aussie. I can't pronounce the name, though. It's like Kokkinakis. From Australia. I don't think Tsitsipas wins that one. That's my hot take. I don't know what's wrong with him the last few years. Like, the last 18 months, he can't beat anyone in the first 3 rounds of majors. It's crazy. So, yeah, I think he loses. So, obviously, I said one of the top three, I'm not coming the big three. The big three is reserved for Rafa, Fed, and Novak. That's what the big three is referred to. The top three seeds. Sinner, Djokovic, Alcaraz. It's going to come from one of those three. I'll give Medvedev a chance. Rublev's playing fantastic tennis right now. Made the final in Montreal. I think he makes a quarterfinal. Someone we got to watch out for is Grigor Dimitrov. I think he's playing very good tennis. He's a 9 seed right now. Got to watch out for him. Maybe Felix Auger-Aliassime is playing much better tennis. So it's going to be interesting. Alex de Minaur, that's a cool one to watch out for. I mean, people are loving Ben Shelton. I mean, he kind of gets under my skin. He's very cocky. Didn't show much respect to Djokovic last year. I'm like, man, what have you done? Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'd say those are the three. If you put a gun to my head, I'll pick Alcaraz. But it could, I don't know Djokovic's health for five setters off that knee. I know he played great on the clay, but on the hard courts, I don't know how that's going to work on his joints. He's in unbelievable shape. I'm not saying that. But I'll probably pick Alcaraz, but it's close. Sinner, that there's just so much going on with Sinner based on those doping allegations and him failing the drug test twice, but then now he's free from it. It's the whole thing's wild. So I don't know what he's going to do there and how that's going to play with him mentally. So based on all those factors, I'll go Alcaraz, but if either Sinner or Djokovic wins, it would not surprise me at all. And then if you want, I really think Medvedev's going to have a good tournament. He's not playing well. Like, it's not like I'm going out on a limb. People are like, oh, what do you mean? He's the five seed. I know, but he stunk up the joint the last few tournaments. So it's kind of hard to say. If you want more of a long shot that can make a run, like outside the top 10 seeds, I'm going to go with a good old little, I'm looking right now. Let's go. I don't have the draws in front of me too. Holger Rune's playing good tennis. Let's go Holger Rune. I mean, Tiafoe's a 20 seed. He's made the finals in Cincinnati, and he played decent earlier in the year. Almost beat Alcaraz at Wimbledon. So let's do that. Let's do Tiafoe, Holger Rune, Medvedev, and I'll go Dimonor and who's the other one I was going to say? I forget now. Dimitrov. Those are the ones I think will make outside chance runs. And I say look for Tsitsipas to disappoint. Look for Casper Ruud to disappoint. And maybe even Zverev. Who knows? I think Zverev's going to make the quarterfinals, and then we shall see. But that's my off the... I'm just looking at who's playing, who I like. And the women's side, I like Sabalenka a lot coming into this. I think she's playing great tennis, lost last year, has the motivation to win this year. People love Coco Gauff, but she has not played good tennis at all leading into this. So that'd be a surprise if she won at all. She didn't play well at the Olympics, did not play well at all in Montreal and Cincinnati. And as a defending champion, there's a lot of pressure. We'll see. But I'm not buying the Coco Gauff hype coming in. Iga's going to make the round of 16, and then we'll see. Danielle Collins, maybe. I'm not a huge fan of hers, but if you want to watch out for someone, maybe watch out for the 5 seed from Italy, Piolini. I know she's playing Andreescu in the first round, but she made the finals at the French, made the finals at Wimbledon. She's the 5th seed here. I mean, I hope Andreescu wins, but it wouldn't surprise me if she made a big run. And Ostapenko is playing much better tennis. She won the French Open a few years ago. She opens up with Naomi Osaka, the 2-time champion. In the first round, if she can get through that, I think she can have a decent tournament. I know it's not her favorite surface, we understand that, but I think if she gets through that match, she might do okay. And you know, Collins, as much as I think she's a bit crazy, I think she's gonna play some good tennis too. So there you go, that's just my little off the top US Open picks. We have a minute left here on the show. I said I would talk about the Patriots. Look, Drake May played well yesterday. Like, let's not kid ourselves. He looked fantastic. But again, my position has been the same since week what? 2 of training camp? Week 1 of training camp? Hell, maybe since they drafted. I think even I didn't know how the team was going to be shaped up. But I was like, listen, you do not play this kid. The O-line stinks. I saw 1 week of the training camp footage. I'm like, this O-line is bad. And last night, you took away 2 things from that Patriots game. Drake May is very, very, very good. And this O-line is awful. That's the 2 takeaways you must have had watching that game last night. He had another 40-yard touchdown taken away because of illegal formation. He had 8 penalties in the first half, 10 total on the offensive line. It wasn't good. I would still play Brissett. The Patriots aren't going anywhere this year. Why are we going to let the future get his bell rung? It just doesn't make any sense. That'll do it for the Tommy John Show this week. We'll be back next Monday on CGLO 1690 AM. We are back at 2 p.m. Thank you so much for listening, and we will speak next week. Hey.
taste is never gone, so you drown out the sun.